Welcome back to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, Governing to Win, Exploring Ideas to Enhancing National Competitiveness. My guest today is Chuck Proe, editor of the recent IBM Center book, Governing to Win, Enhancing National Competitiveness Through New Policy and Operating Approaches. So Chuck, would you elaborate on your proposed new conceptual framework, Enterprise USA, and more importantly, how can adopting such an approach be a catalyst for improving the competitiveness of the broader economy?
Sure. It's a great question. And this is really a work in process. So we call it a new concept, but the government in general, through the various management offices in government, are every day focused on improving government. This book hopefully just provides some clarity in terms of how we look at improving performance and how we measure improving performance. It struck me. I spent the first 20 or so years of my career in consulting to consumer enterprises and the last 12 to 14 years serving the federal government and state governments. And it struck me very early in that transition into government consulting that the clarity provided by the financial realities of commercial enterprises is amazingly clear. Companies are measured on EBITDA, how much cash do they generate, and ROI, how effectively do they turn that cash. It's very clear. When you move to the government, the government, as much as we like to oversimplify it, is not like running a company. It's very different. And the men and women who serve the government in these capacities do a very, very good job in a very, very difficult environment. But having said that, it is inescapable that there isn't the same level of clarity. And what this book attempts to do is to provide clarity around what value is in the federal government. The federal government comprises dozens and dozens of missions, and those missions are typically statutorily defined. They're very clear, and those missions can be measured. And what the book tries to outline is a very, very simple proposition that says that all of these missions are required to have a certain level of service, perform a certain level of quality for a certain amount of cost and a certain amount of time. And anything we can do to take time or cost out of one of these missions without negatively affecting service or quality, by definition, is a good thing. The big dimension of the equation is time. Because, ultimately at its core, the federal government is composed of dozens and dozens of white-collar processes. These white-collar processes typically have bottlenecks. And anything we can do as government and as industry serving government to take time out of the service and out of the mission without negatively impacting mission effectiveness will ultimately drive increased value.
And it affects the economy, the broader economy as well.
That is a great point. For too long, we've talked only about taking cost out of government. That should not be the primary focus. The primary focus is improving national competitiveness, and we're going to improve national competitiveness by more effectively performing government missions at a much lower cost point.
Actually, I like to pick up on that because in the book you point out that the traditional cost reduction programs won't do it. And you mention and you outline the development of new value-driven business and operating models. Can we talk a little bit about the core elements of these models that you're suggesting?
Sure. The core elements of the operating models are, again, back to the value equation, is really focused on time and service. So these operating models, with a very, very clear definition and a very, very clear measurement of how long it takes to perform certain functions and how quickly those functions can be performed and at what cost, is a slightly different way of looking at the problem. Too often in government, we talk about, budgets, and my budget's either bigger or smaller than last year. Not often enough do we talk about how long does it take to do our core missions and how much and what the service levels are of those missions. There are many, many great examples in commercial enterprises that can be applied to government where companies compete on time. And when they compete on time, Southwest Airlines is a great example. It's a classic example. Southwest Airlines is all about speed and simplicity. They are the lowest cost provider in the airlines industry. They provide the highest service on most measurements, quarter in, quarter out, on the various surveys. They have a very simple model. They keep their supply chain simple. They use one brand of jet. They keep their maintenance simple. They keep their HR policies very, very fresh, and they compete on talent and with talent. So there are a lot of great examples out there in the commercial enterprises that can, again, be applied to the federal government on the dimension of new operating models.
So, Chuck, I'd like to talk about some examples. And what I'd like to discuss is, what best practices do you see or do you find throughout programs that fundamentally drive and improve mission value? Let's start with IT.
That's a great question, because as we've indicated a few times already in our discussion, there are very, very great practices in government, and there are great practices in commercial enterprises that can be applied to government. As it relates to IT, the administration's Cloud First initiative is clearly on the mark. There are not yet a lot of great examples, but I know in servicing our clients are very, very aggressively moving to cloud-based models, and it is very clear that that virtualized infrastructure approach to computing in the government is ultimately a much lower cost, much more highly effective way to serve our federal missions. It's kind of point one. Point two is in this notion of advanced content management. There are examples out there such as the SSA Claims Disability System, the CIS Ellis program that was recently in the press. There are great examples of where governments are applying technologies, we call it advanced content management, to both the ingest, digitization, and processing of information. And by more quickly getting hard documents and non-machine readable information into systems, it frees up an enormous amount of operational flexibility. You know, imagine if you didn't have to have standalone locations to process claims, that you could actually move claims anywhere you wanted to move claims based upon the efficiency of those people processing the claims and bottlenecks that you may have in your system. There are many, many great examples of how advanced content management are being applied in the federal government to, again, significantly reduce the time dimension and significantly increase the quality aspect and the service aspect of the missions we perform in government. Application management. Application management is another area where enormous efficiency can be garnered. In today's federal IT spend, a significant amount of that spend is applied to what is called the operations and maintenance aspect of the life cycle. That is, after a system is initially developed and deployed, then you have the cost to maintain it. And there are many, many practices. One that comes to mind is combinatorial testing, which is where we're really applying analytics to drive improvements in the testing process and ultimately lower the cost with an O&M. There are many, many examples inside the federal government. FEMA is a great example of where the government is applying very, very modern, highly effective techniques at driving down their O&M cost. You don't drive down O&M cost by declaring a budget reduction. You drive down O&M cost by fundamentally changing the way we manage applications. And again, there are many, many great examples of that occurring in the federal government. The Workforce One program being currently piloted by the federal government, this is a great example. Through the use of technology, we are linking community colleges to where the jobs are really going to be. Social media. The Southern Command and the Department of the Army just very recently piloted a set of capabilities around social media and how can we utilize social media to actually improve the way we perform activities and, oh, by the way, stop doing things that we no longer need to do. And also, we devoted an entire chapter to the last point I'm making, that's around shared services. I mean, shared services, as most of you know, is leveraging similarities in the federal government, grouping those similarities in one spot, and then making the execution of those missions much, much more effective. You don't have to look past DLA, Transcom, and Service Canada to find examples of this is not a theoretical discussion. You can look at the cost and the quality of those missions now compared to where they've been over time, and you can see their improvement over time.
You mentioned analytics being applied to meet mission effectiveness. I'd like to actually delve into that. So could you give us some examples or practices in analytics?
Too often when we think of analytics, you know, we think of it very narrowly related to fraud. Mm-hmm. But in general, the capabilities around predictive analytics are being employed throughout the federal government, throughout commercial businesses, to become much more targeted in the work that we do. I mean, there are great examples in law enforcement, as an example, where we can utilize predictive analytics to much more cleanly be able to deal with situations and deal with identity type applications. Those are very great. And why predictive analytics is being much more heavily utilized both in government and commercial processes today is for that very reason. It is not just about the reduction of cost or the improvement of insights. It is really being used to very, very specifically target the activities that are required to be done and stop doing activities that are no longer required. I mean, the best way to cut cost is to no longer have to actually do that work, no longer have to make that payment. So we're going to continue to hear a lot about predictive analytics. There are very, very good examples of places like IRS. There are good examples in state governments. There are good examples within the Department of Defense. There are great examples in the intelligence community where, again, today predictive analytics are being deployed to, again, reduce costs, but more importantly, you know, take time and improve services, the service levels of our missions.
So what do you see in the area of supply chain? What are some of the best practices there?
Supply chain is, again, we've used Department of Defense examples extensively so far, but supply chain and the utilization of technology to increase the visibility of goods and service movement is where supply chain is every day significantly improving the performance of our missions. We talk about procurement in the book. Procurement is very important. We buy a lot of stuff. We will continue to get better in the way we buy that stuff. And there are many, many good programs in the federal government being implemented around purchasing today. We have to go faster. I know OMB and the various agencies are focused on that. But when you back away from that, the actual improvement in the way we move goods and services through our supply chains are as important. And you see great examples in the Postal Service and what they're doing. They continue to stay maniacally focused on their cost structure. You see the great things that Transcom has done over time. You know, places like the Mint and other agencies that actually have production-type capabilities are other areas where, again, the continual effective utilization of technology to improve supply chain effectiveness and visibility are very essential to improving the quality of our missions.
So, Chuck, as we close this discussion, your piece and the book that you edited, Governing to Win, to what extent does it represent a call to action rather than a call of despair or a note of despair?
Well, I think it's absolutely about a call to action, and I think it's it is very much about providing examples that need to be leveraged. There is nothing about this discussion that is easy. It's never easy. Okay. However, hopefully what this book does is it provides a framework by which we can provide clarity to the discussion and a framework by which we can continue to drive performance improvement into the federal government.
Next up, our conversation continues with David Walker, contributor to Governing to Win, when the special edition of the Business of Government Hour returns.